Good afternoon. It's 3 p.m., 71 degrees. Clouds kind of breaking up for a minute here on campus. Showers and thunderstorms more likely this evening. I think about a 70% chance. And a low tonight of about, what is it? 42 degrees. Coming up at 4 o'clock, All Things Considered from NPR News. Judith Merriweather will join us at around 3:30. Our music begins this hour with a performance by the Polish National Radio Symphony Orchestra under the direction of Stephen Gusenhauser. This is a performance of the Golden Spinning Wheel, Opus 109, by Antonín Dvořák. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stephen Gusenhauser conducted the Polish National Radio Symphony Orchestra in a performance of Dvorak's The Golden Spinning Wheel, Opus 109. Almost 26 minutes past the hour of 3 o'clock, Judith Merriweather will join us in a couple of moments.
Thank you. CBS Studios this afternoon is Dr. Brandon Bellanger. No, he's not from Louisiana, but we'll get to that in a little while. He's here to talk about a couple exhibits that he's involved with, one that's at the Acadiana Center for the Arts on I-10, Art on I-10, and also a special pop-up exhibit called the Crude Life Portable Museum, a citizen art and science investigation of Gulf of Mexico biodiversity after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. His doctorate is in science, with an artistic spin to it. So it's a really interesting weaving of interests and skills, and we are all the richer for it, getting to observe his exhibit and learn from it. There will be an artist talk this coming Saturday at the Acadiana Center for the Arts, so we can see the pop-up exhibit, have an opportunity to talk with Dr. Bellanger about his work. So before we go into the specifics of the two exhibits, talk to us about how you merged your interests in science and art. You're interested in biology, and which started first, art or science? Do you remember?
Ooh, that's a tough call. Actually, both. I've always had a keen interest in nature since I was a child, and had a really difficult time deciding between going into the arts or going into the sciences, and realized at some point I needed to do both. And so learning about different organisms, specifically aquatic species like fish and turtles and amphibians, and then later learning that often these are the species that indicate the health of ecosystems, became really, really relevant not only to my scientific practice, but I felt a desire to somehow express this artistically. And so combining the two was always a challenge, but over time I've worked on ways to be able to do both.
Well, some people in our audience may remember that you had an exhibit at the ACA 3 or 4 years ago, I think, beautiful, colorful images of sea creatures. And that was how did you end up having an exhibit at the ACA? Were you?
Well, that was I guess one of the first things that happened when I was working, doing volunteer work with the oil spill in 2010, is I just met this incredible network of artists and scientists and activists and just people that were really, really involved with wanting to try to figure out what was happening with the spill and how to clean up and how to save organisms. And many of these folks were artists, so I met the curators all the way back several years later in like 2012, and we just kind of built up this friendship, but also stayed in touch and thought of, well, how can we finally do something together in Lafayette? And so the exhibition in Lafayette in 2014 was a large sculptural vitrine, so 16 feet by 8 feet tall by 2 feet wide, which was a cross-section of the Mississippi Delta with all these different organisms and all this amazing life that we have in Louisiana waters, which is incredible. I mean, it's for the Americas and for the United States, an incredibly biologically rich area. And so to be able to bring all these organisms in, but also to show kind of issues with the habitats that we're living in and these organisms are living in. So we were finding lots of garbage and litter and all these things, batteries, old car batteries, old boat batteries, lawn chairs, all kinds of stuff. But then to think that there was still life struggling to exist and thriving and surviving even after the oil spill and even in the midst of this damaged ecosystem. So it was really important for me to bring that to people just to kind of have that connection with, you know, this whole side of like bayou life that you never get to really interface with, and to see those organisms not just on your dinner plate, but actually as individuals. And you'd mentioned the colorful portraits. Those were all of amazing species of fish that were found during the oil spill dead. And they had been chemically altered. I chemically did something called clearing and staining, so they look like very vibrant X-rays, and then created portraits just to get an idea of what, again, the diversity of the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, it's such a special place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to let people know that you have an incredibly rigorous science background. As you're talking about the art, you have your PhD in science from you studied in Europe for many, many years and received your PhD from a Swiss-British collaborative program. University
That's
program.
Right.
And you are now a postdoc at LSU.
That's right.
So you're doing serious science, again, studied rigorous academic science, but it is obviously important to you to express what you're studying, what you're researching, what you're finding through art. Is that something that is just unique to you as a person, or is that becoming more widespread that people who are passionate about environmental issues are searching for ways to reach out to ordinary people?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, what we're seeing is it's very symptomatic. I mean, I think the history of art, science, collaboration, and artists and scientists combined as the same individual, there's a rich history of that in Europe and the Americas. Look at John James Audubon, for example. And then more recently, of course, there are many, many artists turned scientists and vice versa, or scientists that were also involved in art. So for me, I think it's part of my working process. I need to do the scientific exploration. I need to do the kind of detached observation and the analytical side. But I also, after the fact, need to express the findings in a different way, the experience of what it's like being in a field. You were talking a little bit before about my background. What I studied as a graduate and PhD student is actually amphibians, frogs and toads and salamanders, as bioindicators. What can their development tell us about the health of an ecosystem? And specifically, I was looking at multi-limbed frogs and diseases in amphibians, and the fact that in my lifetime of 43 years, we've lost about 40% of the global amphibian population, which is really, really a crisis. And so having said that, you can plug that in now to when we start to look at some insects and freshwater fish and mollusks and other species. We're in the middle of this mass extinction event, and increasingly it's not just artists that are talking about this, but it's scientists that are needing to somehow tell this story to a larger public. So I think we're seeing changes in science, we're seeing changes in art, but even just changes in society where we're all realizing that there's a lot at stake and it's disappearing very quickly. So we're trying to figure out strategies to slow this down or change it.
To emotionally touch people, because
that's right.
Most of us don't read scientific journals. We may hear a news report here and there
right.
about something in a scientific journal, but but art touches people.
I think
it really
that's
impacts
just it.
Upon them emotionally.
That individual connection that can go beyond. I mean, obviously, like looking at data and looking at statistics, that tells a story. But if you can tell a story at an individual emotive level, or a way to inspire people about. I mean, that was really.
Or just like a metaphor, help us to see it
exactly.
in a way that our unscientific minds might not be able to otherwise.
I think that's just it.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Dr. Brandon Ballanger. He is both a scientist and artist. He has a pop-up exhibit that will open at the Acadiana Center for the Arts this Saturday during Second Saturday Artwork. He also has work in the Art I-10 exhibit on display, I believe, in the main gallery. The pop-up exhibit will be traveling around, and we'll talk about some of the other places where people can see it. So let's talk about it. We've all been fascinated by the different techniques and mediums you've been describing that you use in your art. So let's talk about what you did with this pop-up exhibit, because you obviously want it to be portable and to take it to people where they are. So how did you start thinking about that? How did you start thinking about the frame of this pop-up exhibit?
Well, from from the artistic standpoint, I've been working on the issue of the oil spill since it was happening, and always tried to think of ways like visually I could ask scientific questions or speculate through the art. But then as part of that, as I mentioned, that developing the relationships with people that were directly impacted, that we're living here, that are fishing and that are involved in trying to restore the coast, I just found that there are these incredibly rich communities that are really not having access to contemporary art or high standards of science education. So how do you reach those communities? Particularly, how do you get youth involved and thinking about their long-term future in this landscape, which is changing very, very rapidly? So working together with a team, I approached Prasanta Chakrabarti, the curator of fishes at the Museum of Natural Science, and we discussed me coming to do a postdoc. And I said, well, what if we try to come up with some innovative ways to do outreach? So we're actually bringing the Natural Science Museum to the public, but especially rural public and people that are living in isolated villages that may never be able to make it to Baton Rouge or to New Orleans, to the aquarium or the Museum of Natural Science or the ACA for that matter. So how do we bring that experience to them at an individual level? But then how do we also make it participatory? So over time, it developed into a whole collaborative work. There's an artist from Florida who's coming to join us this week at the ACA, this weekend, named Sean Miller. And his artistic practice is making portable museums. So it was perfect. So I enlisted Sean. Sean came in. We started to think of ways that we could develop this portable natural history museum, but also take it just beyond not just science, but add the art component. Then I was looking at when I was visiting people, I noticed that they had sea chests. It's just a part of the culture here more so than I've ever seen anywhere else. And then that becomes a metaphor for the idea of movement, because a lot of the communities that we're visiting are really under threat of needing to move over the next few decades because of sea level rise. So that became the metaphor. So then we had the container. We have these portable sea chests, and each one of them is retrofitted as a natural history museum. So each focuses on a particular area, like avians or birds. Also the connections with certain dinosaurs and the way those dinosaurs over time became birds. And then we have different invertebrates. So we have great rare creatures like a deep sea roach, which most people have never seen before. So to be able to bring that into City Park in New Orleans, when it's an animal that lives at 5,000 feet of water and looks like a giant roly-poly from, you know, also something out of a science fiction movie, it's a great experience for people to be able to see and also be able to hold and take pictures with.
It reminded me, as I was reading the description and looking at some of the pictures, kind of like the old cabinet of wonders.
That's
the Victorians had, cabinets they would open up with these marvels that had come from the Amazon or wherever, and a bit steampunky too.
Absolutely. I mean, those are all the inspiration. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about something as rich as the Gulf of Mexico, it's incredibly biologically diverse. We don't even know the number of species that live there. We know more about the surface of the moon than we know after 300 feet deep in the Gulf of Mexico. So there's so much we still don't know. So that mystery is a real component. Mm-hmm. And bringing it from the Gulf to people, especially those that are fishing and shrimping and are so tied in. I mean, that's one beautiful, really special thing about South Louisiana is we're so tied in with this water. And it's, you know, the Gulf is our backyard.
But like you said, may not know what's 300 feet below the water.
Absolutely. There's so many things that we still are looking to discover.
So in addition to just making people marvel at these creatures and putting them in these lovely settings, these wonderful vintage sea chests, you're also hoping to get people to think about creatures that have disappeared, I guess, since the oil spill, and you're eliciting their help and interaction with this, aren't you?
That's correct. We, as part of a scientific paper that came out last year, we identified 14 endemic species. Endemic species are species that are found in one place on the planet, as far as we know. So they're found nowhere else. And so we have roughly 88 endemic species in the Gulf of Mexico of fish. I'm sure there's many, many more that we don't know about. But of those, 14 of them haven't been reported post-spill. They were reported between 2005 and 2010, but we can't find reports after that. So a big side of this has been citizen science. And what I call more like participatory science or biology, we're actually trying to get folks that are on the water to make observations. And hopefully that olive branch between the scientific community and fishermen and rural communities, I think could be a real asset, because if we're all working together and we're all collaborating, cooperating, we know so much more about what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm. And again, people can see all of these wonderful sea chests and participate, be citizen scientists here in our community this Saturday, the 13th, at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. The exhibit will be there. You'll be talking about your work, and I guess there will be questions and answer.
That's right. Mm-hmm. We'll have a discussion where we'll be showing some slides and examples of traveling the museum around. Several of the portable museums will be there, so you'll be able to actually physically see them and see the specimens and interact. But also Dr. Suzanne Frederick, who's a marine algae expert, she's a collaborator on the project, and she's a UL professor. She'll be here talking. Link Morgan, who's an undergrad biology major at LSU, will be talking about his experiences. Sean Miller will be coming from the University of Florida. And we have another artist who's coming to sing science papers. perform science papers. So Kevin Maloney from University of Florida, Gainesville. And so he'll be performing science papers as well as golf songs.
Is he going to perform one of your papers?
I don't know. I'm leaving it up to him. He has son, so we'll
see. Sounds like some incredibly avant-garde, art songs. You know, that's wonderful. So many ways that we can interact with people who are passionate about creatures in the water, particularly in the Gulf. But so many of these people, like Suzanne Frederick, work around the world. People know her internationally. So a lot of incredible talent has come to bear on this project that people can participate in this Saturday.
Yes, absolutely. We've had wonderful collaborators.
So that will be at 5:30, and it goes until around 8 at the Acadiana Center for the Arts. So everyone's invited to attend that. Now, this pop-up exhibit will appear in a number of places. Can you let people know where they
absolutely.
Can see it
it's
if they can't
be,
make it this Saturday?
Yes, it's going to be traveling. So at the ACA this Saturday, we'll be there. And then next week, it'll be installed at the LSU Museum of Natural Science. So on the LSU campus in Baton Rouge from the 15th through the 19th, we'll have a reception and another performance on the 19th. And then back our way again, more in the Cecilia Arneville area at the Atelier de la Nature on Sunday the 21st. We're doing a prairie planting day. The Atelier de la Nature is an art and nature reserve that my wife and I run in Cecilia Arneville. And so we're doing a program where we're asking people to come, and especially kids. So we'll be doing cooking in French, and we'll be doing planting prairie plants and making doing engineering catapults where kids can build catapults and then shoot seed bombs out into the prairie. And then we'll be planting trees with the LSU School of Ag. And there'll be performances there too. So it's free, and please come join.
All right. I'm sure people were busily trying to write all these places down. Do you have a website or a Facebook page where all of those events
are
listed?
Sure.
Yes.
You could just look me up on Facebook, look my studio up if you like, but also Atelier de la Nature and the LSU Museum of Natural Science and the, of course, the ACA. So all the events are listed.
There. Well, let's talk about some of these sea chests. Maybe describe one of your favorite in the exhibit that you worked on.
Oh, there's some amazing ones. There's an ichthyology sea chest, which I work in the fish lab as a postdoc now, so maybe that's a really special one for me. But it's got some amazing creatures in it, some deep water fish, deep water sharks. And many of these specimens were ones that I found during and after the oil spill. So they've been chemically cleared and stained again, so you can see through them. So this time you can actually see what some of the specimens actually look like. They really do look like glow-in-the-dark x-rays. But then there's amazing like artifacts there too. There's a bluefin tuna tail. You know, so this is the most valuable fish on the planet at this point. This is one of the most rare and sought after fish for sushi in Japan. So we have an historic tail. I mean, this is a species that's still in the Gulf of Mexico and still migrating through. They're enormous. They're, you know, the size of a Volkswagen bug. And then there's sawfish bills and all kinds of things to pick up and hold and look at. So that's a special
and
one.
That and all fits in a sea chest?
It does, yeah. We've done. Sean has done an amazing job like kind of retrofitting these with shelves and thinking through that really small space as though it's a really large space.
Mm-hmm. You think some kids have been inspired to make their own little chests from seeing that?
I sure hope so. That's another component. When we're at some of the sites, like down in Pointe aux Chênes, we're working with there's an artist named Monique Michelle Verdon. And so we commissioned Monique as part of the project to make a documentary on her people and how this very quickly, because of sea level rise, these folks have to figure out what their future is going to look like very, very quickly. And working with some of those children, they brought in artifacts and then they made drawings. So we try to incorporate that into the museum too. Mm-hmm. So the shrimpers there have bought me some pretty amazing specimens. And I love that side to it. So it's not, you know, our project. It's mm-hmm. already a collaborative mm-hmm. project, but it really becomes more of a community project. And so it's something that we all can get involved and build upon.
Right. We could all have our own little museum on the go, create our own sea chest with artifacts and wonders. But as you said, there's also this investigative side of it too. And you are hoping that with people seeing the creatures in the Gulf in a different way, perhaps they will help out with trying to discover if these species are still around, if they still exist.
Well, so. That's just it. Is mm-hmm. asking you know, people to plug in, become citizen scientists. Mm-hmm. So there's a component where I go out with folks and we actually do dip netting and seining, and we're actually doing collection together. But there's a whole other side just with fishermen and shrimpers and people that are in the Gulf anyway collecting food, just to, if they see one of the species that they think, to take a picture or save the specimen mm-hmm. and just to help save some of the bycatch. And that's just – it's fairly easy for them to do, and that's an incredible resource for scientists. You know, there's so few of us in such a vast amount of space. Mm-hmm. So to be able to enlist people that are on the water all the time, it's just it's such an asset.
Well, I know that the birders have been really good about that, enlisting citizen, you know, counters and scientists. And so perhaps our marine creatures will inspire people
as well. I certainly hope so.
To go out and find them, count them, and see if they're still around. If you're finding yourself fascinated by what you're hearing, my guest is Dr. Brandon Ballanger. He is an artist and scientist and is the creator, collaborator with others as well, of the Crude Life Portable Museum, a citizen art and science investigation of Gulf of Mexico biodiversity after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. He will be at the Acadiana Center for the Arts along with some of his other collaborators this Saturday, the 13th. It starts at 5:30, goes until about 8. I think your presentation begins at 5:30. There will be all kinds of things happening at
yes.
that time, and some of the sea chests will be there for people to see. And you also have some art in the Art on
I-10 exhibit. That's right.
Tell us about those pieces.
They're an older body of work that's now from around 2005. So at that point, you know, more than a decade ago, I got really interested in this idea of what is the environment, and you know, what does that constitute? Well, how am I a part of that? Because often we hear about the environmental movement, and it's changed somewhat. But at that point, I think it was really, when we talk about environment, we're thinking about a species very far away in a distant place that was disappearing. We were thinking about something that wasn't quite in our backyard. And I wanted to examine that very personally. So what does it mean for me to not just be an artist or a scientist, but what does it mean for me to be an organism living at this moment in history? And what is my legacy? What is my biological legacy? So I worked with several different collaborators and physicians, and had hair and fingernails and tissue tested to find out what kind of industrial chemicals were found in my blood and within my body. Just at any moment, if you're born after a certain moment after the Industrial Revolution, they're just kind of unnaturally occurring chemicals within your body and within every organism on the planet at this point. And so they may or may not have an impact on you, but just the fact that they're there shows what moment in history you were born at. And I was really interested in that idea, so I made these kind of very personal portraits. And you'll be able to see them if you see the exhibition, but they're fingerprints. I had myself fingerprinted at the New Haven Police Station when I was doing some work at Yale, and which was a really strange process. That's where Jim Morrison was fingerprinted as well. And they didn't like that reference when I brought it up. But they agreed to do the fingerprints, and then I enlarged them, and then I did these paintings out of blood mixed with some of the chemicals found in my body naturally. And so they're fairly abstract, but it was my attempt to kind of show this connection as an organism living in a really complicated environment and wondering, like, what, you know, how do I place myself in that? Also, the material that they're made out of, the canvases as such, are layers and layers and layers and layers of postcards and letters from my parents and, you know, Christmas cards from my grandmother and bed sheets and all these different things, which were part of this ephemera of what it means to be a physical organism. And they kind of end up looking like skins because they're just layered and layered and layered. And they're very organic looking pieces in that regard, and they really look like, I guess, like skins is what they've been described as. But it wasn't really the intention as much as I just wanted that material to resonate somehow and tell the story of what it means to be alive at this moment in history and being born at that moment in history.
I think our listeners are gathering that you are fearless when it comes to using different mediums. Is there no medium you won't try to use to express something that you're thinking or observing. What a lovely thing and what a credit to you as both scientist and artist. My guest, Dr. Brandon Ballanger, is part of two exhibits associated with the ACA, Art I-10. He has the pieces he was just describing that's in that exhibit, which is on display now. And there will be a special artist talk on January 25th. We'll let you know more about that as that gets a little bit closer. But this Saturday, during Second Saturday Art Walk, he and his collaborators will be at the ACA to present, talk about the Crude Life Portable Museum, the pop-up exhibit that will also be in quite a number of other places. You can go to his website, BrandonBallanger.com, and LSU Science Museum and some other places, and the ACA, of course, to find out more about where you can see the pop-up exhibit and see these beautiful sea chests, just reminiscent of old cabinets of wonder. And again, as we said, just a little bit steampunky. Great sea chests full of wonderful life that comes from our backyard, the Gulf, and the waters that surround us. Well, Brandon, thank you. I'm sure everyone is glad that you make your home here in Louisiana now and that you've turned your artistic and scientific eye to what is in our community. And we thank you and we look forward to seeing your exhibits.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been great to become part of the community. And thank you so much.
We look forward to more exhibits in the future. Thanks.
Thank you.
Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Enjoy Zydeco blues and old school R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS, 88.7 FM, and online at krvs.org.
Dirty Rice, satisfying your Louisiana music R&B since 1991. Join either me, Bill Bolins, or Mr. Lee Klein Peter for the best in Louisiana music. Cajun, Zydeco, blues, swamp pop, you name it, we got a whole lot of rock and roll, too. That's Dirty Rice, every Saturday night at 8:30 to 10 p.m., right here on KRVS 88.7 FM and on the Internet at krvs.org.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, a public service of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.